Yeah, so please excuse that last week we had to cancel the lecture, but yeah, nevertheless, I hope you had interesting demonstrations of 3D computer vision techniques the week before, so 2 weeks ago. And in fact, you should have seen, or you have seen, one system which we will look a little bit closer today. And that was the first one where you saw how we can take pictures of a scene from multiple viewpoints and then reconstruct a 3D model from that. And we won't look at the entire pipeline, yeah, so we will be able to do that towards the end of the lecture. But today we will look at a particular aspect, and that's binocular stereo. So we assume that we have two pictures of a scene, yeah, taken from roughly the same position, like the two eyes of a human person, and how we can compute 3D information from these two images. Yeah, this is what we will look into today. Okay, before we do that, let me make two organizational things. So first of all, I have the TANs for the evaluation of the lecture. I'm sorry, I'm pretty late. So the evaluation only runs until, I think, Saturday. Yeah, so please use this week to do the evaluation. And I will just let them pass around. Please take one TAN for every student, please, only. For the tutorials, you will get the TANs. You got an email about that today. You will get it in the tutorials, yeah? So please go there to do the evaluation for the tutorials. As for the exams, probably you know, or you should have heard, we will have an oral exam. So by the way, the slides are online since, whatever, 2:30 or so. so you can also find that on the slides in Studon. So as for the exams, we will have oral exams, 30 minutes each. The exams will be by Christian Ries or me. And today we fixed some dates. So we have one very early, July 23rd. That's an offer for you. Yeah, if you say you have many exams and you prefer to have one very early, then this is the spot for you. And then we have September 20th and 21st, that's at the very beginning of the second term of exams or possible slots, and October 11th and 12th, the winter term begins very early, so that's already in the first week of the winter term, yeah? So I hope you can find suitable spots for you. To fix the date, please contact our secretary, Maria Barotti. Here you find her phone number and her email address. And she is ill today, so you won't be able to reach her today. So there's no reason to hurry. And we have enough slots, yeah? So I'm optimistic that everybody of you finds a date for the exam that fits well. But nevertheless, please try to get a date for your exam or an appointment, ideally this week, because the earlier we know whether we have to open new spots or so there, the better we can react. Yeah, so please try to do that as early as possible. The better we can react if there are shortcomings or bottlenecks somewhere. Okay, are there any questions on this? No? Okay, good. Then the normal disclaimer, yeah, where I've stolen several of the slides from. Okay, just to put things into context, yeah? What are we speaking about today? So what you saw in the demo 2 weeks ago, one example, yeah, was a scenario which we call multi-view stereo reconstruction, for instance. And here the idea is that we have a set of cameras, yeah, or that we took one camera and took multiple pictures of a scene. Yeah? and then reconstruct a 3D model from that. And yeah, here we can have multiple cameras. And in that scenario, the first thing you have to do, you first of all have to find out where are the positions of the cameras. Yeah, so this is something which we already spoke about here in the lecture. Yeah, so that we define the relative positions of these cameras. Yeah, and then we can look at arbitrary points of our scene, look at these points in the different images. Yeah, and these points will be in the images at different positions. And from these positions, we can derive where in 3D is that point. Yeah, so that's a very simple problem once the cameras are given. Yeah, another way to look at that, this is what we spoke about last time, is the following idea. So let's say we have a number of cameras or number of pictures, and we don't know where these cameras are positioned. Yeah, and now we look at the motion of arbitrary points. Yeah, so we look at how this point moves from here in this image to this image and in this image. Yeah, so remember last time we looked at that. And if we know that, yeah, then we again can compute the positions of these points in 3D space. Yeah, so that's motion. And what we will look at today, motion in this context is over the camera here moves further. Yeah, so we have real motion. What we looked last time was at what we call optical flow, and here the camera only moves, yeah, not too much. Yeah, so we have more chances to find correspondences. This is what we looked at last time. Yeah, optical flow, given two images, find the location of a world point. So this is by if we know how much or how much the point moves, we can recompute its depth. Yeah, from this. And another problem or subproblem of that entire field are stereo correspondences. Yeah, so in what I've shown in the beginning, I said, okay, we look at a particular point and look at its position in the different images, and from this we can find its position in 3D space. But of course, now it's an interesting question: what are corresponding points in these images? Yeah, so I mean, in that example, it's very simple because we have a cube with colored vertices or corners, but in reality, you won't have that. You will have faces, and you can, for instance, look at stuff like the nose or things like that, yeah, which you find in every image, but that's usually not enough. Yeah, you want to find correspondences in these images, and that's also another interesting problem. At the motion estimation or optical flow last time at this lecture, we looked at windows in both images, yeah, and tried to compare them using different measures. Essentially, yeah, that's also a way to find correspondences. And you remember for some image parts, yeah, finding these correspondences is easy. For others, it's very difficult. Yeah, if you have a plain white wall, you won't find correspondences. And yeah, for these correspondences, yeah, that's also what you already learned. We have the epipolar constraint. Did you hear about the epipolar constraint? Yeah, okay. So what helps here, yeah, is that we know if we have a particular point in one image, then in the other image, yeah, so we have a particular point in one image, so we don't know its depth, so it can be somewhere on a ray through that point on the image plane, and that ray in the other image becomes a line. So we know that point must be here on the line, so we are restricted to where we have to search these correspondences. Okay, and what we want to look at today now is binocular stereo, and all these ingredients now will come in. So essentially, what we have is something like this. We have a scene, yeah? And now in the scene, a camera is moving. In this example, we have more than two images, but today we will only look at two images. But what this shows nicely is that if we move horizontally the camera, then objects, of course, also move left and right. But the closer an object is, the faster or the more it moves. Yeah, so a pixel in the background, yeah, one point moves only little, and points in the foreground move more. And now this is, of course, a special case of optical flow, what we had last time. But we also have, but it's also simpler. And the first observation we make here is that because our camera, only moves horizontally, also the optical flow can also be horizontally. We assume that the scene is static. Yeah, we have no motion in the scene, no moving objects or something like that. We assume a static scene. And because the camera is only moving horizontally, points also move only horizontally. Yeah, so we have a much smaller search space, and we only have to search horizontally for correspondences. We can even limit, at least to some degree, we can limit how much it can move, yeah, by making simple assumptions, how far objects, how close objects can get, for instance, yeah. And yeah, so we have a simplified problem. And the goal now is to compute something like this here, and this is called a disparity map. And essentially, this is a map that tells us for every pixel how far it has moved between two images. Yeah, we look at stereo now. That means we only have two pictures taken with a slight horizontal offset. And for these two pictures, yeah, we compute the disparity of single pixels. We compute how far is a pixel offset from one image to the other image. And the larger this disparity, we will see that, yeah, the closer the point is in the 3D world, and the smaller the disparity, the further it's away. Yeah? And so essentially disparity is essentially the same like depth. Yeah? Okay, good. So, yeah, this is what we will speak about today, stereo vision. Yeah, and the goal is to infer information about the 3D structure and distances of a scene from two or more images taken from different viewpoints. Yeah, and as I said, for today we won't look at very far away viewpoints, but rather close viewpoints. Yeah, so we have two images that are rather similar. So it makes it, yeah, the images are well comparable. Yeah, and we have a rather small space where we have to search for correspondences. Yeah, and in such a system, there are two problems we have to solve. The first one is to find the correspondences, yeah, to find where one particular point in one image can be found in the other image. And from that, we have to derive a map like this one. And here now we already see a problem that we will come to in the second part of the lecture. Of course, if we look at an edge here, for instance, yeah, at the head. Oh, okay, it's not what I wanted, but it's just. Oh, fine, that doesn't work. Well, that's excellent. yeah, if we look at a silhouette point here, yeah, and that moves left and right, we can easily detect that. Yeah, we can easily find where the corresponding point is here on that image, yeah, just because we have to look for that edge. If we have a rather uniform region, like for instance here in the lamp, yeah, okay, so let's say that's rather uniform, it's very difficult to find a particular point here again, just because it's uniform. So essentially we can find the correspondences at feature points, yeah, or at in particular at silhouette points, at edge points. That's rather simple, but in between we somehow have to guess. Yeah, and this is what we call reconstruction. Yeah, we don't want to have a disparity or a depth map that only contains a few points, yeah, where we are pretty sure about, we want to have a map that is really full, yeah, that contains a disparity estimate all over. And for optical flow, we had a very similar problem, yeah. So essentially, yeah, we also have to solve that problem here to get a real full disparity map, and this is what we call reconstruction. Okay, good. This is what we will look into today. And I mean, doing stereo to get 3D information of images, of course, is a rather obvious idea. And also nature had this idea. This is one reason why we have two eyes. And also most animals have two eyes. And yeah, the point is that if we have two eyes, we see the 3D world from slightly different points of view. And our brain is able to find correspondences, and from the offset of these correspondences, it can compute depth. Yeah, that's only one depth cue. There are many other ways. Obviously, also one-eyed people can perceive depth. Yeah, so it's not the only way, but it's one very important way. And the eye also, or the human eyes also do something that we will also use in some cases. And that is that it changes the view direction depending on the depth of the object we are looking at. Yeah. So if I'm looking at something very close, yeah, my eyes turn inwards. And the reason for that is that if we look at a particular point, yeah, let's say in this example, C or P, in this example, it would be P. Yeah. If we look at P at this point, and the eyes are slightly turned inwards, then P ends up at some point on the retina here and here. Yeah? And if we now look at a further point or at a closer point, the eyes usually rotate, yeah, such that these points again are mapped to the same position on the retina. Yeah? So that's a kind of first guess about the depth, so that corresponding points, yeah, get closer together or always end up at matching positions on the retinas. Yeah, it's a kind of way to improve depth perception or to make it simpler. Yeah, we will also use something similar in our stereo setup later on. Yeah, but that's not the main way how depth perception works. Yeah, it's just helping the brain a little bit, yeah, to make a first match of the images. And another thing that might also be interesting and that we will also see quickly is that if we look at the geometry of that thing, yeah, it is we can quickly derive that obviously the further away a point is, yeah, the more difficult it is to perceive its depth. Because just the change in this angle here becomes smaller and smaller. Yeah. It works very good for objects that are very close, yeah, but the further we get away, the smaller the differences become. So obviously, for humans, yeah, depth perception by the stereo effect mainly works in the near range, and for far range, other cues are required for depth perception. Okay, so how can we describe that? Okay, so let's try to build up, yeah, with what we learned up to now, a system that is similar to binocular stereo. Yeah. So what we have or what we need is two cameras. Yeah. We say that these cameras are positioned at OL and OR. Yeah, these are the optical centers of the two cameras. And to make things simple, yeah, we now assume that the view directions of the two are parallel. Yeah, so we have no vergence. We really look parallel. And now we look at a particular point Q. Yeah. And now we see this point Q in the left image is projected here, And in the right image, it's projected here. So it's in very different positions of the image. Yeah, here it's on the right half, and here it's on the left half. Yeah, where in fact, yeah, if we think for eyes, this is something like 7 centimeters. Yeah, then these are maybe 15 centimeters. So that would be a setup, yeah, where the point is here, yeah, which is not a normal way or distance we look at. Yeah, and for another point, yeah, here we have here PL and here we have P. Yeah, so for the left and for the right camera. Okay. And now we can say what happens, or we can look at, yeah, one step back, yeah. So we have P and Q, yeah, and now we can, of course, compute the position in 3D space, yeah, simply by taking rays, yeah. Let's say we know where our cameras are. We know OL. We know OR. We know that they are both looking here parallel, yeah. And we know the positions on the image plane, yeah. So we click at these points in our images, for instance, yeah. And then we can build up rays here and here, and where these two rays intersect, there must be point Q. Yeah, if we find here is point Q, and here in this image it's here, we just intersect these two rays, and where they intersect, yeah, there must be the point. And for P, we can do exactly the same. We can also put this into formulas. We will see that later. That's very simple math. Now, of course, if we do a mistake in computing correspondences, we will get wrong results. Yeah, so if, for instance, we say here in the left eye, we see a point P, and in the right eye, we assume it's point Q, yeah, then we will get an intersection here. And yeah, obviously, yeah, we get a wrong result. So, of course, wrong correspondences means wrong results, but also for nice features, we will always or never really be sure where exactly in the image such a feature is. Yeah, so we can always be off by 1 or 2 pixels, or at least in subpixel range. Yeah, we can slightly be off. So we can look at that. Yeah, so how precise is our measurement? Yeah, if we say the user clicks at a particular pixel, for instance, for correspondences. Yeah, so we have 1 pixel with a precision of 1 pixel. We clicked at a particular feature. So in fact, yeah, if we mark this 1 pixel here and now compute a ray, or not only a ray, but a complete pyramid that goes through that pixel. Yeah, it's a very tiny pyramid, but in the distance it gets bigger and bigger. Yeah, so we have that pyramid here. We have it here, and in the intersecting range, yeah, now we know there must be Q. It's somewhere here in the intersection between these two pyramids. Okay, and we will also later see that also shows, or I think you can quickly imagine, if we have a point here, this intersection is rather small, but the further we get, the further away, yeah, this intersection becomes always longer and thinner. Yeah, this is exactly this, that the further we are away, the less precise the depth perception is. Okay, so how can we describe that in a mathematically, yeah, that entire process now? So let's assume we have a point Q at this position, X, Y, Z. Now Z is the distance from the cameras, yeah? So this is the depth, this is what we want to get. X goes into this direction, and Y, yeah, goes now into the direction to the audience, which we cannot draw here, but all the formulas for X are also valid for Y, or at least to a large extent. Okay, now this point Q, is here is projected to a position XR, And here it's projected to a position XL. Yeah. And you see they are different. Yeah. So this one is further to the right than here. And if with T, we describe the distance between the two eyes. Yeah. This is what we call the baseline. So for human eyes, typically it's assumed that this distance is something like 7 centimeters. Okay, now let's look at the formulas, yeah? So if we assume that here the left camera is in the origin, yeah? So this is x equals 0, this here. Yeah, then we can simply by similar triangles compute that XL or XL over F is the same as X over Z. Yeah, so these are similar triangles. This over this is the same as this over this. So XL over F is X over Z, and that means X is XL times Z over F, yeah, just solving for X here, yeah. This would give us the position, yeah, in is a simple expression for the entire ray here. Yeah, all points on this ray fulfill this expression. We know the point is somewhere here on this ray. And now we do something similar for the right eye. Yeah, for the right eye we have similar triangles. Yeah, and now we can say XR over F. Yeah, is, and now this distance here is X minus the baseline. Yeah, this is the baseline, this distance, but the X we perceive here is only X minus the baseline. X minus the baseline over Z. So that's this formula here. It's exactly the same like here above, but for X we have to subtract the baseline. Yeah, and if we put all that together, I think I don't really need to derive all these steps, we come to this formula here. And this formula says now that the depth set, yeah, for this, the intersection of these two lines, yeah, both this must be valid and this must be valid. Yeah, and we can also solve this, for instance, for X and then equal. Yeah, the depth is F, that's the focal length here, times T, the baseline, over XL minus XR. And XL minus XR is the difference of the projection of this point in the two images. So essentially it says, yeah, or essentially this is that disparity. How far are these two points away from each other in the two images? Yeah, or if I look for one point in the other image, yeah, how far do I have to go to the right or to the left? Yeah, that's the disparity. And obviously, yeah, the disparity is directly related to the depth, yeah, and it's inversely proportional. That means the larger D, the smaller Z, yeah, or the smaller D, the larger Z. And this we can, if I shortly go back to that example here, yeah, so here we can see that, for instance, the lamp is closest, so it moves fastest. Yeah, so that's the disparity. If we take it from the first to the last picture, yeah, how far does this point move? That's the disparity. And for the lamp, it's largest because the lamp is closest. And in the background, yeah, the movement is much smaller. So here the disparity is much smaller, and that means the depth is larger. Yeah, so depth and disparity essentially are the same. Yeah, and we know how to relate them. Using this simple formula. Yeah, essentially set is one over or depth is 1 over disparity. Okay, so that's a very simple simple behavior. And now we can look at another parameter, because obviously, yeah, we or one part of this relation is here the baseline T. Yeah. And now we can see, okay, does it make sense to choose T small or to choose a large T? Yeah, and yeah, obviously, if we look at that graphically, yeah, we see that if we make that assumption that I said before, yeah, so let's assume we can find a feature only within a pixel, yeah, so we find correspondences only within a pixel, then we know we can generate such a pyramid or in 2D a triangle, and we know that point is somewhere in this triangle, yeah, and if we do that for the other camera, we know it's somewhere here in that pyramid, so it must be in the intersection between the two. And obviously, if we have a small baseline, yeah, then this range here where it can be is very deep. Yeah, so we have something very thin and deep. So the precision is very low, yeah, because we only know that it's somewhere between here and here. And the precision in depth is much lower, or the imprecision is much higher than here in the pixel. Yeah, and we need a very precise positioning here to get a precise depth. And in particular, that's the case. The further we are away, yeah, the worse this becomes. On the other hand, yeah, if we have a large baseline, that improves. Yeah, because now our pyramids, yeah, come more from the side, and so the intersection now here is more a square than something lengthy like here. Yeah. And obviously, that's the better, yeah, that gives us more precise results. So you might say, yeah, why not always use this here? And in fact, it's a trade-off. Yeah, in terms of precision, it's better to have a large baseline. Yeah, that means to have very far away eyes, yeah, that look at the scene. But on the other hand, yeah, and this is also something we can see here, if the eyes are very far apart, the two images are very different that we perceive. And now finding correspondences becomes a much more complicated problem. One very simple reason can be seen here. Yeah, if the eyes are very far apart, then this point here is in the right half of the image, and here it's in the left half of the image, so we have a very large search space. Yeah, so we have to go very far to find correspondences. And furthermore, if we are far apart, the images are so much different that there will be many regions of a scene that are only visible by one eye and not by the other. And if you see a part of a scene only with one eye, we cannot generate correspondences. Yeah. So if you imagine we have chalk. Okay, we have no chalk. Mm-hmm. Ah, yeah, okay, just have to dig in. Yeah, so let's say we have some object, yeah, and now we would have one eye looking from here and one eye looking from here. Yeah, this eye sees that part of the object. Yeah, and this eye, yeah, so let's be a little bit more optimistic, this eye sees that part of the object. Yeah, so they have only a very small region, yeah, that both eyes can see. Yeah, and for that region, yeah, we have a very good behavior. We can excellently estimate depth, yeah, with very good precision. Yeah, but it's only here, yeah? So here we cannot find a correspondence because that eye doesn't see that point. Yeah, and now this is really difficult to describe, yeah? So, because it depends on the type of object you look at and at which typical distance and so on, yeah? So there's no clear rule that says this is the optimal distance. Nature decided for the human tasks, for the typical human tasks, 7 centimeters is a good baseline. But for other purposes, yeah, we might say, okay, maybe we use another baseline. Okay, but for now, yeah, we will more go to this direction, choose a small baseline like for the human eyes. Yeah, so the pictures are rather similar. We have a restricted search space and can approach that algorithmically rather easily. Okay. Yeah, so here is now, again, the very similar picture to what I've shown here. Another issue now in that setup that we chose, that we have two cameras that are viewing in parallel, another issue is that, of course, we can only reconstruct depth in the intersection of the two images, Only where the two camera thruster overlap, we can do a reconstruction, of course. And if our cameras look parallel, then this region here will be rather small, or there will be large parts of the image, where we cannot do stereo just because only one camera sees. And now here we do, or we can do exactly what the human eye also does. We say, okay, we leave the optical centers, but we rotate the cameras inwards. And now we have a much larger overlap, which is good, which makes sense. But on the downside, geometry becomes more complicated. And these formulas here, these formulas are based on the fact that we are looking in parallel. And if you try to derive the same formulas now for cameras that don't look parallel, you will see that the formulas become more complicated. Now, complicated formulas is not something we should be scared of. And this is something that can be solved, and computers are very fast in computing such formulas. And we will also see how we can combine these advantages of taking cameras that look inwards and the rather simple geometry that we had before. And this is what we call image rectification. Okay, so what's the idea? Now let's say we have two cameras with some baseline, and they don't look parallel, but we have this vergence. They look into not really arbitrary, but they look in not parallel directions. So we have here an image plane, and here an image plane. And for that pinhole camera model that we use, an image is generated by simply projecting a point onto these image planes. So this point here will end up here in the image, and this one will end up here in the image. So these are the two images that we generate. Okay. Now we have the problem that these two image planes are not parallel. So it's very difficult to compare two such points. But what we can do is the following trick. So let's say we have a camera and its corresponding image plane. And now we introduce a new image plane. We take that simple setup that we know from the pinhole camera, and now we define a new image plane. And by construction, now it's very simple. For every point here on that plane, we can generate a ray through that point and can compute its intersection with a new image plane. So that means every point on this image we can map to a point on the new image plane. And we, of course, cannot do it only for that point, but for all other points in our image. That means if we have one image for one image plane, we can map it to an image that would have been generated on another image plane. We can map images from one image plane to another, as long as the optical center stays the same. And that means, and that mapping here is rather simple. It's a projective mapping. It can be described by a 4x4 matrix. It's a homography. We can easily describe that. And we know and understood all the math behind that. And we know how to handle that. Okay, so why does that help us? Or here, we have a 2D example how that works. Yeah. So this is our camera. This is our image plane. Yeah. Usually the image plane is perpendicular on the view direction, but now we can define any other new image plane and project all the points from the old image simply to the new image plane. Yeah. Okay. And how does that help us? It helps us in the following way. Yeah. So let's go back to the setup we had before. We have our two eyes. We have our two images, yeah, that we took with weird view directions. But what we can do now is that we define two new image planes here, or in fact, it's one image plane, but two images on these image planes that are parallel. Yeah, or this is, they are on the same image plane, these two. And now we simply project these images onto these images. Yeah, so we project this one onto this one and this one onto this one. Yeah, and now we are back at this very simple setup that we had before. Yeah, and this is called rectification. And here we see an example how that looks in reality. Yeah, so here we have an object, and that object has been viewed from two different perspectives, two different cameras with a rather large baseline, yeah, so that we see the difference. And now we do this rectification and we get these two images. Yeah, so you can imagine we take these, yeah, and project them onto these new image planes. So that means, yeah, we take such an image, yeah, so that's our image, and projecting it onto the new image plane, yeah, would mean we take now rays from here through this image onto that image plane, and as a result, yeah, so I will do that here, that's my view perspective, yeah, and as a result, I end up here, 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 and here. Yeah, and after rectification, the image is distorted like this. Yeah, and this is exactly what we see in the lower row. Yeah, this is how these images have been generated. It's a reprojection. We take every pixel of the original image, yeah, and move it or project it to the pixels on the new image plane. And these images contain have the same content. Yeah, it's just warped a little bit. Yeah, and we maybe don't have a one-to-one pixel correspondence, so maybe it gets a little bit blurry. But in fact, we have the same image content. And the advantage here now is not only that the math is simpler, but we also see something different. And that's the following. If we look at that cube, yeah, this cube has nice lines. So that's in fact the reason why this picture has, or this object has been taken for that example. Yeah, now if we look at these edges of that cube, we will see that these edges now are all on horizontal lines. Oops. Sorry. They are all on horizontal lines. So what happened now? In fact, you remember the epipolar constraint and the epipolar lines. Yeah. So if we look at the epipolar lines of points here, of the vertices of the cube, yeah. You see that here we have these epipolar lines, yeah, and they converge here in the epipole, which is here somewhere outside this image, okay. And the epipoles, in fact, are the projections of the other camera to my image. So, if the epipoles, they converge in the camera, in the position of the camera that was used to take that image. Yeah? And if we are at that situation here, yeah, we have two parallel image planes. So that eye in that image is not visible. Yeah? It doesn't project because this baseline is parallel to the image plane. So that means the epipoles are at infinity. That means the epipolar lines don't intersect, yeah. And in fact, for our example here, that means that the epipolar lines here are all horizontal. And that means if we look for the correspondence of one particular point, we only have to look at the same line. Yeah, our search space is much smaller. Or, okay, we know that from the epipolar lines. Yeah, but our epipolar lines are simply the scan lines. Yeah, to find the correspondence of this point, we only in that image only have to look at the same line. Yeah, at the same scan line. And to find the correspondence of this point, we only have to look at the same line in that image. Yeah? And if we have these two images rectified, yeah, that simplifies the correspondence problem. So we have this image and this image rectified. We have a nice feature here. Yeah? And if we want to look for that feature in the other image, we only have to look along this line. We know it must be, if it's visible, then it's somewhere here on this line. And if we look for the correspondence here, in the other image, it will be somewhere here on this line. Yeah? And of course, that's from an algorithmic point of view, that's very simple and very convenient and very nice. Yeah? And for that reason, yeah, we, in for a, such a stereo setup, if we don't have parallel cameras, or if for some imprecision reasons we cannot guarantee that they are parallel, we always first do a rectification. Yeah? For that, we need to know the exact relative positions of the camera, we need a calibration, you know all that stuff. And from that calibration, yeah, we can compute such a rectification and can generate two images where we know we only have to look for correspondences on the same scan line. Okay, yeah, so this now is the first step, rectification, yeah? Good. Now we have the correspondence problem, yeah? As I already said here, we have an image, yeah, we have a point, yeah, and now we have to look for that point here on the image. Yeah? And typically we would assume, okay, this is what we already did for motion estimation. Yeah, we look at a local neighborhood of that point, yeah, and now we look for the same local neighborhood here on the same scan line. Yeah? And this, of course, makes some assumptions. Yeah. So, for instance, this is again the same argument as we had here, or a very similar argument. If we look from the rather similar directions, then this region here in the other image will probably look similar. Yeah. We will also probably have something like this here. Yeah. If we have very different baselines, this can no longer be guaranteed, because here we look at this point from a very different angle than here. Yeah, then it's not guaranteed that even the local neighborhood looks very similar. But if we look from rather similar directions, then these images will be rather similar in normal cases. Okay, yeah, so correspondence problem, yeah? So there are different things we can look into now. So first of all, what do we match? Yeah, so as I described it here, we look at a little window around, so we look at the pixel values in a small window, but there are other methods that, for instance, look at edges, at object edges, that look at point features or other stuff, yeah? So we will look into, or the most often used way is to use a complete set of pixels in a local neighborhood. So we look at the pixel neighborhood around here. Then we have the next problem that we were also speaking about in the last lecture, about how do we measure the similarity? Yeah, now we have two windows around a point and we want to measure how similar they are. It's very unlikely that they are the same, yeah, that the pixel values are exactly the same. There will always be noise and variation in illumination and stuff like that. So we somehow have to measure how similar are they. And here, essentially, we can use the same stuff we used in the last lecture. And also, how do we optimize the search? Yeah, can we do the search in a systematic way that we can also achieve results in reasonable time? Yeah. And yeah, so you said, that many of these problems we already discussed for optical flow. And yeah, we will nevertheless look into that now once again, because now we always have the problem of complete scan lines, and we also have the reconstruction problem. We also want to fill in holes between where we don't have that much information. Okay, point correspondences. Yeah, who of you knows these images? Stereograms. There was about 15 years ago, that it was a sort of hype, and many books were sold. Does somebody remember them? Yeah? Okay. Okay, a few do. Yeah, so the idea of these images is that you have two images that look like random white noise, yeah? But in fact, it's not random noise. There are correspondences between the left and the right images, so there are parts of the image that look the same or that are equivalent in the left and in the right image. And if you manage to look at these images in a way that your brain starts finding these correspondences, you suddenly see depth. Yeah? So you should look at these images. I think you have to hold it very close to your eyes and have to learn that. And at some point, suddenly the brain finds correspondences, and then immediately you see that dot pattern, but you also perceive the depth behind it. Yeah, that definitely won't work here on the projector. So you have to print these out or to buy such a book to experience that. And and some people stare at it for a long time and don't manage to see that, or just only get a headache. This is exactly what we want to do now. Yeah, we want to find correspondences, not in such weird pictures, but we want to find correspondences in two pictures. So here is a maybe better example. That's a very old, often used example for stereo. It's two pictures of Lincoln, yeah, taken from slightly different positions. So if you look at the two pictures, they look very similar. But if you put them into such a device that there are simple devices with lenses, so that this is the picture you see with your left eye and this is the picture that you see with your right eye, then suddenly you perceive also again a depth for that one. Yeah, it's like these stereo glasses or stereo cinema. Yeah, you just need to get slightly different pictures for the left and for the right eye with these disparities, and suddenly you perceive depth. Okay, now, how can we do now stereo or depth perception on these pictures algorithmically? So first of all, we assume, or if this is not the case, we do a rectification, or we assume that the images are rectified. So we know correspondences are on a scan line. Yeah, and then for each pixel in the left image, we have to start with one. Yeah, we compute or we compare each pixel on the left image with all pixels on the epipolar line in the right image. And yeah, now we have to define correspondences, and the simplest thing would be that we say, okay, we take on the right one, we are looking for a pixel that has exactly the same intensity value as the one we are looking at here. Now, this doesn't really make sense, because maybe such an image line here has 1,000 pixels. We have 256 intensities normally, yeah? So we can expect four other pixels that have the same intensity. So in practice, we will have to look at a complete window, yeah? And that means for every pixel here on the left image, we define a window. And then on the epipolar line here, yeah, we again get such windows, yeah, or we have a window that we slide over the epipolar line, and now we are looking for the position when we slide it over here, yeah, at which position does the window look as similar as possible to the one on the left, yeah? And the minimum, or where we have the maximum similarity, yeah, this defines our disparity and so our depth, probably. Okay, and yeah, this is this idea. And now we have the problem, how do we define similarity, yeah, between two such windows? And yeah, we were speaking about that already for optical flow, because for optical flow we have exactly the same problem. And here, just to summarize again, I have we have written down the most popular norms to measure that. The first one is the sum of squared differences. So we take or we go over all pixels in these windows, take the difference and square it, yeah, and sum all these squared differences. I told you in the last lecture that this is not the best choice, in particular because if there is a large difference in two pixels, yeah, which can always happen due to disocclusions or stuff like that, this will dominate the overall error, yeah, because a large, yeah, or the distance is squared, goes squared into this error. So if there's a large, or somewhere a large error, and this is even squared, this dominates all the subtle distances we in fact want to measure. So another one is here the correlation, yeah, that we simply multiply all the pixel values together, yeah, this pixel times this plus this times this, and in fact this gives something that is maximal if the images are the same, yeah, and becomes smaller if the images vary. And we will also see that this works nicely, and this in fact has the advantage that if the left and the right camera are not exactly the same, so that there are brightness differences only for technical reasons, yeah, we have a camera that always gives slightly brighter values, yeah, if this is the case, this will always generate an error, but in fact that one will nevertheless give something reasonable, yeah, even if the cameras are not exactly the same. And this can also be normalized, yeah, by subtracting the average color and dividing by the variance or by the standard deviation of the pixel. So this gives a normalized value, which is maybe even more helpful than here, because this gives really something like percent or so that we can better use for comparisons. Okay, so all these we were speaking about already in the last lecture. So here we see examples. Yeah, so we have two images, two pictures, stereo image, left and right. Yeah, we look at this particular scan line, for instance. Yeah, or we look at this pixel. No, sorry. Here we see. We look at this pixel. There's a little neighborhood, yeah. And now we slide a window over the right image, yeah. And here we see the in this example the similarity or the distance between that one and the sliding window here on the right. And you see that there's a clear minimum, yeah. And obviously, or we can assume that this is the point where we have the correspondence. And in fact, yeah, this point also delivers us the disparity. Yeah. So how far do we have to go here on the right to have a minimal distance? Yeah. And this is somewhere here, because here the red window looks very similar to that one. Yeah. And in that case, it's particularly simple because we have this edge of the building here. So all the pixels on the left are brighter, on the right are darker, and here the similarity is minimal. And here on the right, all the pixels are dark, yeah? So here we have low similarity, so that's somewhere here, and that one is somewhere here, so we also have low similarity, and here we have a clear minimum. If there would be another building Yeah, that looks very similar. Or if we would have another edge here, yeah, we would. It could happen that we get another minimum here. Yeah, and then it's ambiguous. It can happen. It can also happen that, for instance, here we choose a pixel that shows a part of the image that is not visible here. Yeah, then we would find no correspondence. Yeah, then we never get a clear minimum. That can always happen. Yeah. But here it's very clear, and we have a clear minimum. Yeah, and this is for an example that measures similarity. Yeah, so here we have a minimum. Here again, a nice plot. But if we use correlation, yeah, then it's exactly the other way around. A high correlation means very similar. Yeah. And for that example, applying the correlation measure, we see that here. And again, here we see a clear maximum. That's exactly for this edge here. Yeah, so you see also that one works in that example. So, yeah, here another example, a corridor scene. We look at these two scan lines, and in fact, here we see the intensity profiles along these scan lines. Yeah, so that's just the brightness along this line shown as a curve. And you see now, if we only look at these plots, of course, they are very similar. Yeah, so here this shape exactly appears here again. The only difference now is that they are slightly moved relative to each other. So if we only visually look at these two plots, it looks like they are the same, but if we would put them on top of each other, we would see that the peaks here, yeah, that they are moved with respect to each other, and this is the disparity we are looking for. And if we now look at particular patches, for instance, here again, yeah, this is very nice because it's rather rather easy to find. Yeah, in its upper left, it's dark, in its lower right, it's dark, and the rest is bright. Yeah. So finding that here again is rather simple. Yeah, so here we see the left image band. Yeah, from the left image, that part, we are looking at that particular pixel. And in the right image band, now we have to find that neighborhood. Yeah, and it's pretty clear that it must be here. Yeah, and if we look at the cross correlation in that example, yeah, we see that at this position, if we move that window to here, yeah, then we have a clear maximum. Then then we found the correspondence and the disparity. But sorry. Okay. If now here we look at that part, yeah. So here we have plain white wall, and we look for the correspondence down here. Yeah, I think we realize that it's rather difficult. Yeah, we see it will be somewhere here, but I mean it's really difficult to say whether it's exactly here or here. In fact, as a human, what you would probably do is that you see, okay, there's this dark thing here. This also appears here. Yeah, so obviously we must be somewhere here, but this only shows that obviously our window here is not big enough to find that feature. So here we only see plain white wall. Yeah, and here it's very difficult to find that. Yeah, and if we look at the cross correlation, we see here many maxima. Surprisingly, there's one maximum, but I'm not sure whether this is really the right one. But there are other maxima here. There's also one, yeah, that could be somewhere here probably. And here are others, so it's by far not as clear as it was here. Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. So in textureless regions, that won't work. Yeah. Or that will bring us into trouble. And as I said in the example before, we could say it was just the window was not big enough. But even if we make the window larger, we will run into other problems. Yeah. So here we have two pictures of such a tree scene, and we see the results, the disparity results for a small window and for a very large window. And for a large window, for a small window, maybe, first of all, we see that there's lots of noise. In fact, all these bright spots here, this is just wrong maxima of the disparity. Yeah. So these are maxima that are, yeah, just wrong. Yeah. So all this here is further away, so it should be darker. If we take large windows, this noise is gone. Yeah. But now it's much more difficult to find the structure or the object itself, yeah, because it is the window is larger than the detail that we want to detect, yeah. So we have less noise but also less detail, and again, yeah, finding the right window size is a compromise between what we want. Okay, so that's one point. The other point is, if we want to find these correspondences, how can we do that efficiently? Yeah, because up to now, or in that setup here, to find the correspondence for one pixel here, we have to, or we scan the entire scan line. Yeah, and this is can be very expensive. Yeah, a normal picture has maybe 1,000 pixels in width. Yeah, so we have to make for every pixel, yeah, so for 1,000,000 pixels, we have to compare every of these 1,000,000 pixels with 1,000 other pixels. And in fact, not only the pixels, but the windows. Yeah, every window consists of maybe 25 pixels. Yeah, so that becomes a lot of pixels that we have to look at. Yeah. How can we do that more efficiently? And for optical flow, yeah, we found a solution for that, or we spoke about a solution, and that is to compute the correspondence in a hierarchical way. And in fact, we can also do that for our problem here. Yeah, what we can do is that we take our images and we downsample them. Yeah, to until we are at thumbnail size. Yeah, only a few pixels in every dimension. And now we compute the correspondences on that scale, yeah, which will be imperfect and of course only low resolution, but it gives us a first hint on the disparity image. And then we go to the next scale. We upsample this image, yeah, so we simply enlarge that to the next size, yeah, so this gives us an estimate of the disparity, and now we only refine these disparity images. That means for every pixel we assume we know the disparity, but we look in a small neighborhood around, yeah, and refine that disparity map. Yeah, so we get a first estimate for the disparity, and we don't look along the entire scan line, but only in a small neighborhood of our neighborhood. Yeah, and we can do that from image resolution to image resolution, and in the end we have a high resolution disparity map, but we had to spend much less time because we do not look at the entire scan line but always only in a rather small neighborhood. And okay, so maybe you cannot really recognize it here, yeah, but there are, on the slides you see it much better, that this building is also visible here. Yeah, on the slides you see that very well. Here it's almost everything is completely black, but nevertheless. Okay, good. So that's how we can find correspondences, yeah? And we can also look at some results, yeah? So this scene you have seen before, you've seen that video. Maybe is the left one a video here? Don't think so. No. And yeah, this is what we get if we make this window-based matching, yeah, as we described it before. We try, or here different window sizes have been tried, yeah, and the best window size led to this result here. And okay, I mean, you can see that there are places where it works pretty well, so maybe the bust here in the front, that's sort of okay, the lamp has been detected, also the camera here in the background. But obviously here there are regions where this, where it didn't work at all. And in fact, yeah, it's compared with the ground truth. So this is how it should look like. Yeah, this is not really perfect. So in fact, this is again the disparity, but color coded. Yeah, so it's not black and white, but yeah, close regions are orange, and then from orange it goes to yellow, green, and blue in the end. Okay, yeah, so yeah, that's not a very exciting result. Yeah, but it's first of all the best we can get, and but we still can improve that. Yeah, so what can we do to get better results? Yeah, so first of all, we can try to optimize the way how we find correspondences, because if I go back here, yeah, I already said in low textured regions, yeah, finding correspondences is almost random. Yeah, this already improves a little bit if we do that in a hierarchical manner, yeah, because essentially, yeah, the window size, if we always take the same window size, here we look at a much larger neighborhood, yeah, so we have larger windows in the coarse images, yeah, and fine windows down there, so there's also more information about the neighborhood in there, yeah, so this algorithm already improves on the disparity a little bit. But we could also say, I'm always flipping forward and backward. But what we could also say is the following. So here, for instance, here for the lamp, this is rather uniform. Yeah. So here we know we mainly guess, but at the edges, we are pretty sure about the disparity. Yeah. So we could say, yeah, we don't compute the disparity pixel by pixel, but we look at an entire scan line. And we say here at the edges, we know it very well. In the middle, we mainly have to guess. So in the middle, we mainly fill it up. Yeah. So we this is what we also did with the optical flow, that we said, or by propagating it over the scales, yeah, or by we also had that layered based approach. Yeah, we say, okay, at places where we are not sure, we try to propagate the information from the neighbors. Yeah. Okay, this is one solution. We will see how exactly that that works. Yeah. This is one solution how we can do that, and this is now a very nice algorithm, I think, or a very nice idea. Yeah. So what we want to do is that we look at the scan, at a scan line from the left and from the right image as a whole. We don't compute correspondences for each pixel. Yeah. So we don't take a single pixel on the left scan line and search where it's on the right scan line, but we look at the scan lines as a whole. And now we will see that, yeah, we have scan line one, or left. Yeah, let's just say left. And here we have right. Okay, and now let's say, yeah, here we have an object, the lamp, for instance. Yeah, the lamp is orange, but I don't have orange chalk. Yeah, so let's say this is the lamp. And here the lamp is a little bit moved to the right. Okay, and now we want to find pixel-wise correspondences. So for that pixel here, yeah, if we look at the neighborhood, this is rather simple to find here again, because we have to look for the window, yeah, that is whatever sees background in the back and is orange on the right. Yeah, so that's rather unique. So we can, for that part, we can simply find the correspondence. For that pixel here, this is all orange. Yeah. And here, this could be here, or it could be here, or it could be here. Yeah. So here we are rather unsure where it is optimally. But what we could say now is the following. So here, we are pretty sure. Yeah. So we know that one ends up here. On the right, it's exactly the same. That one will end up here. And in between, we are not really sure. Yeah. So we assume, yeah, it's probably the same as it's on the right and on the left. Yeah. So we diffuse this information to the regions where we are unsure. Yeah. So we start where we know it exactly, and then we diffuse to the regions where we are unsure. And how can we do that algorithmically? Okay, that image here, yeah, explains a little bit the main idea. So let's say we have a point here, yeah, and in the last, or we are pretty sure, yeah, that its correspondence in the other image is here. Okay. Now let's say we look at the next pixel. Yeah, now let's say we are on the same object. Yeah, we are on the same surface. We are at the same depth. Yeah, so this point is on the lamp, and the next pixel also is on the lamp. Yeah, that would be the most simple case. Because it's on the same object, it has roughly the same depth. Yeah, so that means the correspondence here will probably also be exactly one pixel to the right. Yeah. So as long as we are on an object, yeah, we simply, yeah, can say, okay, if I here go one to the right, yeah, then I also here go to the right, yeah, and the disparity just remains the same. Yeah, the disparity remains constant. Okay, now we are at the end of this lamp. Yeah, so let's say here this pixel, yeah, is now no longer the lamp. Yeah, this was the lamp. And now it no longer is. Now we suddenly see background. Yeah? And now for background, there are two possibilities. One possibility is that, yeah, because it's just next to the lamp, it can be that in this image, this is not visible at all. So we have no correspondence. Yeah? But we have to go a few steps. So maybe here, suddenly we see a point which is now visible also in the other image. Yeah, and now we find a new correspondence. Yeah, but you see now there's a jump in disparity because there's also a jump in depth. Depth and disparity are the same. Yeah, and these have no correspondences. Yeah. So yeah, we have to do something and maybe assign them to here. Yeah, but or to here. But okay, yeah, so here we have no correspondences. The other thing that could happen is that this point, yeah, just next to the lamp, now background, is visible in the other image. Yeah? And it is visible, let's say, here. Yeah? So now the disparity jumps, but that means there are other pixels here that have no correspondence in that image. Yeah? Just for exactly the same reasons. Yeah, there are always parts of the scene. If you look at the scene from slightly different viewpoints, there may be points in this image that you don't see here, and there may be points here that you don't see here. Yeah? And this simply means that in these correspondences here, we have gaps here. Yeah? Okay. Good. So these are the three possibilities. If we go from left to right here, yeah, it can happen. If we have the same object, yeah, we just go to the right. If we see a new point, we go to the right more than once. And, we get stuck here. Let's put it like that. All these points get mapped to the same point here. Or the alternative, if we go, we can go here and stay with the same point up here, yeah, because we have the other case, yes, the symmetric case. Okay, that was not very well described, but I hope you got the idea. And essentially, This is described in this image. Okay, so what does this image tell us? So this is exactly the same like this one, yeah, even if it doesn't look the same. But now here, the left image is drawn here vertically, and the right image is drawn horizontally. And now we have correspondences. And every correspondence between two pixels, yeah, or every possibly corresponding pixel is a point here in that square. So for instance, let's say this here, here we are sure we have a correspondence. So that means this pixel, sorry for that, this is not perfectly aligned, yeah, but imagine it's aligned. So we have a correspondence between this pixel and this pixel. Yeah, and this point here stands for a correspondence between this pixel and this pixel. Yeah, so every point here essentially tells us, yeah, how likely it is that there's a correspondence, or it's a pair of pixels for which there could be a correspondence. And for some of these points, we are very sure that there is a correspondence, and for others, we have to guess. Okay, now let's say we start at one point where we are sure about a correspondence, yeah? And now we have three possibilities. So first of all, we have this, both are on the lamp scenario, yeah? We are rather sure we have a correspondence, and if we go to the right, yeah? The same, we are still on the same object, that means now the next two pixels also will have a correspondence. And this means if we have a correspondence here, then we also have a correspondence here on the lower right. That means we go to the lower right. If we have a disocclusion, then we go in this direction. That means we new pixels from that image correspond to the same point here. And this is the other case, that we have disocclusion in the other image, yeah? Then we have the same pixel in that image that corresponds to multiple pixels here. So one is this case, that we have multiple pixels that correspond to the same here, and one is the other case, that multiple pixels here correspond to the same pixel here. And one is occlusion, yeah, that occlusion appears, and the other one is disocclusion. And now these are the three possibilities. Yeah, we start at a correspondence where we are sure, and from there on, yeah, we step through that graph. And the goal essentially is that we start in the lower left. Yeah, that would be that we assume that the leftmost pixels are the same, and we end at the lower right, that's that the rightmost pixels are the same, and what we are looking for now is a path from here to here. And we are looking for the path, yeah, so for each of these steps, yeah, for one particular point, whether we go to the right or down or to the lower right, we are not really sure, we just have something like probabilities, yeah? If we have a very good correspondence, for instance, yeah, then we might be sure about how to go in one direction, and other times we say, no idea, yeah? We cannot really say anything. So we can give weights to these directions, yeah? And then find a path from here to here that generates the minimum weights, yeah? That generates the most likely path from here to here. And each of these paths here, yeah, now corresponds to a matching, to a correspondence between these two lines. And if we take the shortest path with the lowest weights, we have the most likely connection, yeah, the most likely correspondences. Yeah, so we reformulate that problem, yeah, by having such a pathfinding problem. And this is something that is well known in algorithmics, yeah, how we can compute a path from here to here. Okay, yeah, so here are the different cases. one-to-one, left occlusion, right occlusion, how these things can happen. Yeah, so we take that problem matching single pixels from left to right, we reformulate that as such a pathfinding problem here and solve that. And this can be solved quite easily using dynamic programming. I won't go into details here, yeah, but doing it that way gives us very quickly a very good result. Okay. Oops, there's this one here missing. So this is the result, yeah, that we achieve with that. And you see it's much better than we had before, but there are still problems. And one problem is that this algorithm only works on scan line basis. Yeah, so we only find the matches from left to right on a single scan line. But we don't propagate information from scan line to scan line. That would also help. Yeah, here we only propagate within a scan line, but we should also ideally propagate from scan line to scan line. And in fact, yeah, so this results in the streaking artifacts. Yeah, at some points we see that it is done scan line wise. Yeah, and that there are, yeah, that it's not optimal. Yeah, because information is not propagated between scan lines, and of course it is possible to write down mathematically what we want to optimize by also propagating information between scan lines, but in fact, it turns out that this nice linear programming approach that we've seen here won't work for the 2D case. But there are other methods then that can solve it. So I have one reference here. I mean, have a look at that paper. It's very tough to read. Now that's on the video. But this is really a hard read. Yeah. So if you're bored during the summer holidays, make a try. Yeah, and this shows how we can propagate these ideas really to get 2D correspondences, and this also delivers very good results, or delivers then further improved results. Yeah, so you see it's a very basic thing that you want to do, but it's still a work in progress on how to do that optimally, and how to find a good balance between efficiency and accuracy and so on. Okay, good. Okay, now the time is up, and I think. Oops, sorry. Good, but. Yeah, okay, I will do that next week. I will do that next week. Next week, we will speak about structured light. And this was the second demo you saw 2 weeks ago. You remember the Kinect camera or these depth cameras, yeah, that had an infrared projector. And they here the advantage is, or the point is, we have a stereo setup, but we replace one camera with a projector. That's something you can think about for the next week. And I will explain next week how we can do stereo with only one camera. Thank you. See you next week.